Call it meeting, January 26th, meeting Senate Resources Committee to order. The record showed Senator Elton, Senator Dyson, Senator Ben Stevens, myself, Tom Wagoner, and Senator Stedman are present. Ann, would you like to come up and speak a minute regards to the new recording system? So we're.
Okay, thank you. Just for 30 seconds.
All right.
You're probably all aware that we have a new recording system now that we record to a hard drive instead of a tape deck. So we don't have tapes. And we'll be entering minutes into the computer during the meeting. So eventually, and possibly like a two-week period of time, you and the members of the legislature and staff will be able to go to BASIS and access the minutes and click on the timestamp links and actually hear the testimony from the meeting from your hard drive. So you won't have to order tapes if you want to hear what happened to the meeting. So. Just to let you know what I'm doing when the meeting starts, the LIO person will click the red light on. I will start the recording, and then I'll push a setup button on here that populates the document. But while I'm doing that, you're being recorded, just so that you know that. And then when you're at ease, I can stop the recording. But there's two different things going at the same time.
Okay.
And there will be a short training session when everything is up and running. The data processing people are still working on completing the programs to bring it up and running. So, do you have any questions?
Do you have any questions? I got no questions. Just keep us running straight. Also, please let the record reflect that Senator Guest is online. Are you online there, Senator Guest?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay. First item before us today is Senate Bill 32, Water, Sewer, and Waste Grants to Utilities. Presented by Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 32 was introduced to correct a problem that manifested itself with the sale of the Fairbanks Municipal Water System, when the sale of the Fairbanks Municipal Water System unintentionally disenfranchised all Fairbanks water utility consumers. The state of Alaska provides a water system grant program specifically to keep water utility rates affordable. The program is authorized through AS4603030, and available funds are accessible through grant applications. However, because of changing patterns of ownership, not all state-regulated public utilities under the RCA are now eligible for those state grants. The Fairbanks Water Utility became ineligible to apply for these grants when it was sold to a private entity. SB 32 amends current law to accommodate the growing trend of publicly regulated, privately owned utility systems, while remaining consistent with the law's original intent of keeping safe water affordable to the public. With the changes to AS4603030 made in SB 32, all public utilities, subject to the burdens and associated costs imposed by the state RCA regulations, will now be eligible to apply for grants as currently established under AS4603. Mr. Chairman, as my statement indicated, the sale of the Fairbanks Water Utility into the private ownership put the city of Fairbanks out of compliance or not, made them ineligible to apply for grants. The policy question for us as legislators is, if the federal government makes money available to assure that the broadest number of people possible have a safe and affordable source of drinking water, then should the ownership structure of the utility determine whether the people can apply for those grants or not? And my contention to you is that the ownership structure shouldn't automatically make the that group of citizens in the state of Alaska ineligible. Now, I know there is some question with regard to, well, if a privately held entity is able to seek a grant, get a grant, expand facilities, or update equipment, should that private entity be able to enrich the pocketbooks of its owners through the future sale of the entity then to somebody else? But the way that the rate structure works, RCA would not allow a rate that would allow a new owner to recoup the cost of buying that transparent asset. So when a grant is given and the money is invested into the system, that's sort of placed on the books as a transparent asset. If the utility then is sold to somebody else, the buyer is only going to pay a price for that he can then charge a rate to recoup his money. And if RCA does not allow you to charge a rate for that part of the infrastructure that was put in place through a grant, then the owner's not going to pay that price. He's only going to pay for that portion of the assets that he can actually charge a rate for to recoup his purchase price. We received correspondence from the RCA a couple of years ago. Basically, this is a letter from then chairman of the RCA, Nan Thompson. It says, you asked whether the owners of a utility that receive a grant funding under this proposed legislation would receive a profit based on those grants if the utility was ever sold. The brief answer is no, for two reasons explained below, and then she explains here. And it basically goes through the fact that they would not approve a rate structure that would allow the new owner to recoup part of the purchase price if a price was paid for that transparent asset.
How did they say how they would track that? You know, like on a deed, if you got a covenant, it's on the deed itself. How would the RCA track that fact?
I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman. That is a good question. We have somebody here from DEC that may be able to answer a question for how the utilities, if they get a grant, how they place that on their books as far as equity and ownership. They may be able to provide some clarity to that. Also, after introduction of the legislation, an issue came up whether the wording inadvertently caused problems for the community of Ketchikan. We do have a proposed amendment. It was attached with a memo here from our legal department that said that under one particular interpretation, there could have been a problem. It certainly was not my intent. So there, we had the drafters draft up a proposed amendment that takes care of that problem specifically. And with that, I'm available to answer questions if you have any.
Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you know, Senator Terrio, in the case of grants which were given to the Fairbanks Municipal Utilities Program, when they sold the company to a private entity, was there an accounting at that point for that says you can't sell the assets that were granted to you?
I don't know that there was a determination that said you can't sell them, but again, for the purchasing entity, I believe the rate that they then applied for to make their business run, they were not able to apply for a rate to repay themselves for any money they paid for that the grant portion of the asset.
So if it goes from, if I can, Mr. Chairman, if it goes from public to private, they couldn't do it, so we can assume that going from private to public, they could as well.
It's my understanding that as the asset moves along, if ownership changes, that transparent, the way I've heard it referred to before as a transparent asset, floats along, and no one is able to put together a rate that recoups money for infrastructure that has been paid for by a grant.
So if it's then, it's for the benefit of the end user, the citizen of the state, that the grant is given. In that case, do you know, for an example, Ms. Senatorio, whether or not on the power equalization program that we are utilizing those funds and channeling those through private utilities for the benefit of the end user?
I'm not sure how that system works and treats those grants.
But it appears to me that goes in there, that again, we wouldn't care whether it was a private or a public utility. The intent was to try to lower the cost for the end user.
To make safe or clean water available and affordable to the citizens in the state of Alaska.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, maybe at this time it's appropriate to offer that friendly amendment that Senator Cherry had mentioned. I'll go ahead and introduce it, that we do a committee amendment on line, or page one, line one. We delete the word regulated. On page two, line 17, following the word if, we insert the numeric number one. And then on page two, line 18, following AF42.05, which is the continuation of the last sentence, we insert two, the utility is owned and operated by a political subdivision of the state that is a municipality. What this amendment does then is it doesn't modify the ability that the municipalities currently have of entering this program. So it keeps, my understanding is it keeps the playing field level as it is today, but then would include the private utilities, for example, that were once public and then sold to in private
sector.
I just object for a question.
And I don't know who to address the question to, so whoever wiggles their eyebrow can maybe answer the question. The testimony from the sponsor of the bill said that this takes care of a situation in Ketchikan, and so I just need to know a little bit more about what that situation is. And the second question being, the sponsor statement notes that the purpose of the bill is to assist utilities, public or private, that are regulated, and does the deletion of regulated from the title change that and expand the pool of potential applicants for the grant program?
Mr. Chairman, may I respond initially to that?
Stedman, go ahead.
The first section of the answer, the reference to Ketchikan is fairly accurate. I think it was a little new or a little early in the review where that had come up, but it actually has to do with any of the municipalities that have enterprise funds. And, you know, utility runs an enterprise fund. So it's inclusive of substantially more communities than just most likely Juneau included. I would imagine Juneau has an enterprise fund for their utilities, much like Sitka and Ringling-Petersburg.
Senator Terry Hill.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding the particular problem that we ran into is when you talk about regulated, would that be interpreted to mean just regulated by the RCA? We do have the municipalities in Ketchikan being one that has its own private or separate public utility board. It's regulated, but under their public utility board. So that's what we've tried to do here, is clarify that those entities that use that structure are not precluded. And the drafters indicated that if you took that interpretation that regulated only meant the RCA, then a community like Ketchikan might fall out. And that was not my intent.
The second part, thanks to both of you for the clarification. I mean, the second part is of the question is, if you delete, if instead of saying regulated by the state or RCA or by a municipal entity, I mean, by taking regulated out, period, just deleting regulated, are you then expanding the potential pool of new applicants who may be out there wanting access to the grant funds?
There is a potential for expansion of the group of folks that could come in and request regulation as a means of being then able to, they'd be able to submit an application for grant funds. That's true. But this amendment was just structured to take care of specifically those entities that have their own public utility board, you know, that they would not be excluded. And it's my understanding that presently the economic regulated utilities, water and wastewater, there are 23 in the state. There's the possibility that could go up substantially to 170. However, that would be sweeping in, you know, the part that has a water distribution system or, you know, a sewage collection system. I don't expect that many of them are really going to want to live under regulation of the RCA, just in the off chance that they may be successful in submitting a grant application and may be, you know, make the cut to get funding.
It just maybe so another way to ask. Thanks, Mr. Chair. As the chair noted before we began, this fiscal note from the department came to us about 24 hours ago. I mean, with this amendment, do you anticipate there is a need to change the fiscal note that recently arrived?
No, this amendment does not solve a potential fiscal problem from the department of having, you know, a flood of new grant applications. I think there is probably a way of dealing with that, and I'm not sure if the chairman intends to deal with this particular fiscal note here, or the bill does have a further referral up to finance. I certainly am willing to work with the administration on some way of controlling that potential fiscal impact, and it's a fiscal impact that comes from the number of applications they would have to process, really.
And Mr. Chair, another question on a different subject. To help put this in perspective for me, what has been the pool of money that's been available for the grant program over the last several years? I mean, how much money are we talking about?
Again, we have somebody here from DEC. I want to guess it's 20.
In terms of millions?
Yeah. '06 budget is proposed to be $11 million. And again, the change that's proposed in this bill does not guarantee anybody in particular that they'd be successful in making an application. Just allows them to turn an application in, have it scored, and be evaluated with all other applicants.
But I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. But the pie probably won't increase, so you're just going to cut it into more slices is the likely result.
That's correct. We would be taking a step back to, I think, the total number of potential applicants that existed back before Fairbanks took the action that it did.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Hearing seeing none, you have Senate Bill 32 in front of you as amended with 24-LS0290/A1.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Senator Guest?
Thank you. I just had one question, if that's okay.
You bet.
Senator Tirio, on page 2, starting on line 4, when we take out municipality with and we put in utility serving, is there any unintended consequence that a group that might have fallen into one of those categories may now fall into another because we're redefining? You didn't put for a utility or a municipality. It's kind of under what the utility is serving versus the population of the municipality.
No, I don't believe that that possibility exists, if I understand your question.
Could we have a utility that serves multiple areas, and so it would have a different reimbursement rate than if it was purchasing or getting a grant for one of their specific areas?
Well, I don't, again, perhaps a question for the gentleman from the agency. I don't know that when they put in a grant application, it can be for a specific area, nor can I think off the top of my head of a utility that would fall into the category of serving separate and distinct areas. So I don't think we've triggered a problem there.
Was there a reason that you didn't keep municipality in, given that the under E it says a grant to a municipality or public utility?
Well, again, just clarifying, with that language up there, municipality with, then any ownership that was non-municipal would be excluded.
Correct, and I agree with the intent. I just didn't know if then we take out municipality under Section 2 and we put in utility instead of having utility and municipality in. It's something to think about. I don't know the consequences of that change.
I don't either. Senator Seekins.
Are you ready for the motion?
Yeah.
Sure. I'd move Senate Bill number 32 as amended with the attached fiscal notes out of committee with individual recommendations.
I'm just going to object for a point. Something that caught my attention and wasn't discussed or hasn't been discussed yet is the message that we had gotten from the gentleman who's a city manager in Petersburg who opposed this and who has had some experience within the department with the grant program. I guess because we expect the Finance Committee is going to be looking at fiscal notes and fiscal impacts, I mean, I'd be more comfortable if, in fact, we waited until we got some kind of communication from AML or a group that recognizes organized municipalities on what the net effect may be for them. And I'm especially thinking of the potential diminishment of grants or number of grants or size of grants that may be occurring across the board. And I'd like to hear from somebody other than just the gentleman from Petersburg as to that on that point.
Senator Allen, I had a discussion with Senator Terrio. Haven't had a chance to discuss that letter with Senator Stedman, but this goes next committee of referral, of course, is the Finance Committee, and Senator Stedman, who represents Petersburg, also sits on Finance, and that could be taken up there in the question asked and the information received. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Terrio?
If I could. I think the real gist of the twofold, if I understand completely the concerns of the gentleman from Petersburg, and that is, number one, whether a private entity are able to enrich themselves, you know, at the state's expense by having access to these grants. And as I indicated, you know, we've got response from the RCA that basically says, no, we do not allow a rate that lets them repay themselves for something that was constructed at using grant funding. So I think it answers that. The second issue is, well, we're potentially, or we are letting somebody else in the pool to compete with us, and if the pie doesn't grow, then there's the potential that my slice of the pie might be smaller. Again, we're proposing that we just go back to the participants that existed a few years ago. And I guess the policy call, again, is if governmental money is made available, and the majority of this are federal funds that flow through, if governmental money is made available to make sure that there's a safe and affordable source of drinking water, then why does the ownership structure mean that some people qualify and some people don't? You know, I just had the opportunities traveling overseas, and I go into supermarkets quite often just to see what different products and what Western products are there, and I noticed that different brands of soup that I'd never seen, Campbell's soup. Okay. So I picked one up off the shelf just to look at it, and it clarified on the back that you were to mix the contents of the can with one can of purified water. It didn't say water. Now, in the United States, it would just say water, mix it with water, because we all have access to safe, affordable drinking water. And it just doesn't seem to me that if a municipality or a community chooses to have theirs run by a private entity, they are any less deserving of public monies that are made available to make sure that it is safe and it is affordable.
Just a minute. I should note for the record, too, in case you have any questions, James Keene from the Regulatory Commission is online to answer questions. So he is available.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I may be misunderstanding. I mean, I understand it when you say we go back to what it was in the past, because I understand that it's just adding back in the Fairbanks. I assume we're talking about adding back in the Fairbanks utility, but the fiscal note says that there are 193 potential other applicants. Are you saying that in the past they've had access to that grant fund?
Senator Terrio,
you're right there, Senator Elton. That issue again of what the total pool now of applicants is under this new structure, it would be larger. But again, that's every little trailer court, RV park, and I seriously question whether in fact they will want to live under the regulation of RCA just on the off chance that they'll be successful and possibly getting a grant. I seriously question whether they're going to do that, and certainly I'm willing to work with the state agency if there's a way of redrawing that line to give the state agency some assurance that they're not going to be flooded with grant applications.
But Mr. Chair, I'm just as a better explanation, I'm probably going to vote no, not because it may indicate how I vote on the floor once I know more about this, but right now I just don't have the comfort level, and clearly DEC is projecting 96 additional applicants, which is why they want to add the additional person. So I just don't feel comfortable yet with this. And I've got some research to do, and it's certainly not indicative of my potential vote when and if this gets to the floor.
So, Senator Stedman?
Yeah, I think the fiscal note will come under scrutiny up in finance, and hopefully Alaska Municipal League will have time, you know, before the bill comes up to give us some input. Because certainly the more information we have, you know, the better we have to make a decision. But I think Senator Terrio did a fairly good job explaining that it's going to be rather difficult, if not impossible, for one of these private entities to profiteer off of the state grants. And then we'll take a look at the pie issue.
Thank you. Mr. Keene, are you still online?
Yes, sir. This is James Keene with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
Okay. I have one question. Earlier we discussed, Senator Terrio talked about these grant funds, any asset or asset improvement becomes kind of a transparent asset, and they cannot gain monetarily from the sale of that asset along with the rest of the system. How is that noted? Is that noted by the Regulatory Commission? How do you keep track of that being a transparent asset and avoid that cost being passed on at a future date to the users of that utility system?
Senator, this is James Keene. Commissioner Jim Strandberg just walked in, and he may be best suited to answer that question for you.
Okay, so we can perhaps you can.
Yes, sir. This is Jim Strandberg.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Was the question? I'm sorry, I got the tail end of the question. Did it concern a return for the utility making money off of the grant, basically?
Well, basically, yeah. Basically passing on, if the utility was sold at a future date, then passing on the cost of that portion of the improvement to the utility to future customers.
That is, through the chair, that is a very good question, and let me see if I can explain it this way. When a utility is sold, that is a commercial agreement between two entities. The terms of that business deal are they're really a matter which they have between them. We as regulators will only allow for the ratepayer for the ratepayer's benefit the new owner to have a rate at only a certain level, which is really based on the depreciated book value of the infrastructure, less contributions in aid of construction. So if that person that purchased that utility wanted it bad enough and it paid a lot more than what the book value was, that's his business. And that would not be allowed in the rate to be charged to the future ratepayer.
Okay. Any other questions by the committee of Mr. Keene?
Not of him.
Thank you, Mr. Keene. Senator Seekins.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, a comment of why I will vote to pass this bill on is it appears to me that the people of 96 additional utilities will benefit without discrimination for the status based on the status of their utility, public or private, in being able to benefit public funding for safe water. Now, to me, I'm not going to worry about the folks that would say, I don't want them to have it because I want to hog it all for myself. I'm going to say if 96 additional communities are included because our goal is to try to get safe water on an affordable rate to as many people in Alaska as we can, I think that's a good public purpose, and that's why I'm going to vote for it.
Further questions by the committee? We have we also have online Karen Moriarty.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize if I sound repetitive in my testimony, as I just came from the House committee on a similar on the companion bill. But for the record, my name is Kara Moriarty, and I'm the president and CEO of the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. And on behalf of our 750 members, I would like to speak in support of Senate Bill 32. As you can see in your packets, the chamber supported similar legislation last session and supports the concept that all utilities should be on the same playing field and thus be eligible to receive state grant funds. Currently, the only utilities that are eligible for these grants are publicly owned utilities. The grants are primarily used for infrastructure development and upgrades. And based on the regulations set forward by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, the shareholders in privately owned utilities cannot generate a return on investment or receive depreciation expense credits for any grant funds they receive. Because of those regulations, the only beneficiaries then, if a privately owned utility were to receive these grants, would be the ratepayers, thus the citizens of a community. As you may know, all utilities in Fairbanks are either owned privately or by a cooperative. So in essence, Fairbanks businesses and residents are at a disadvantage compared to other Alaska residents. One of the first questions that we often field at the chamber from prospective businesses that want to locate to Fairbanks, or even those businesses that are here and want to expand, is what is the cost of doing business? And utility costs are certainly a major component of a business's operating costs. The infrastructure needs for some of our utilities in our community are great. In fact, it is not uncommon for a business that wants to locate in what would seem like close proximity to downtown Fairbanks to not be able to connect to our major utility lines, thus hampering our economic development efforts. Because the costs of infrastructure expansion are so large, and in an effort to keep rates at a reasonable level, it is a challenge for our utilities to expand and upgrade infrastructure without passing those costs onto us, the ratepayers. Not only would the grants enable our utilities to receive these grants for infrastructure needs, as the infrastructure expands and grows, more people pay into the system, thus making our utility costs more economical for everyone. So on behalf of Fairbanks businesses and residents, I would urge the committee to look at this bill as a fairness issue. It is only fair that our privately owned utilities be eligible, like other utilities across the state, to receive these grants. Thanks again for the opportunity to testify, and I would be happy to answer any questions if you may have them.
Questions by the committee? Thank you for your testimony, Kara. Senator Seekins, did you?
No.
Oh, okay.
I just want to renew the motion.
Okay. We have the bill in front of us. Been moved for passage and forwarding to finance with individual recommendations. Call the roll.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Dyson?
Yes.
Senator
yes.
Yes. Senator Seekins?
Yes.
Senator Elton?
No.
Chair Wendell?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bill Moose. We'll take just a short recess. Next item before us is SJR2, the endorsing Anwar Police. Get back on the line here. Jackson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mary Jackson. I'm staff to Senator Tom Wagoner and staff to the Senate Resources Committee. SJR 2 was introduced. It's a companion piece to a House bill that is also moving its way through. It is not new to anybody here, and certainly it's been an issue that we've over and over and over again discussed and talked about. And the hope is, again, that this is the year that it will all come to fruition. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, if I may just take a small, brief moment to show you and the audience. There's a gentleman in the Kenai Peninsula that made this, and it's our hope that we only need it for this year. And it's a commemorative that Anwar, in fact, opens this year. We have long and hard worked toward that goal. You have the fact sheets, you have the sponsor statements, you've heard all of the discussion pro and con, and almost unanimously every year this body supports going forward with that. And again, it's the hope that this year that will in fact go forward, and that this year with this president it won't be vetoed. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I know there are people both here in the audience and online that would like to testify.
Yeah, let's go to public testimony. The Fairbanks LIO, Debbie Miller.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to make sure you can hear me. This is Debbie Miller. For the record, I'm a Fairbanks resident, and I've lived in Alaska for nearly 30 years. I've also explored and worked and written about the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge over that period. I at one time lived in Arctic Village on the southern boundary of the Arctic Refuge, and have done things such as I helped conduct a wilderness assessment of the 1002 area of the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge back in the 1980s. It's an extraordinary area. It's very different than the Prudhoe Bay area, where we have currently huge amount of infrastructure and development going on. It's a scenically magnificent place. The wildlife values are extraordinary. And it is our only area in Alaska, in the Arctic, that is protected for the wildlife. I think it's really important for us to recognize that we do have a lot of oil development in the Central Arctic region and now in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. That whole area is opened up for leasing. We have no business going into this conservation area. It was established for its wilderness, wildlife, its recreational value. It was not established for oil and gas development. And on your resolution number 2, I'd like to propose some amendments. Line 6, the United States Congress reserves the right to not permit further oil and gas exploration and development, as well as to permit, with an either or. Congress has reserved the right to also dedicate this area as wilderness, and it has been proposed. The wilderness bill has been introduced many years now. We've been working to get this area permanently protected, and that's what I would urge you to consider doing. I'm not against oil development in other areas on the North Slope. We have many, many areas under lease already around Prudhoe Bay, and much more room for growth. And industry is not interested in this area. ConocoPhillips, Chevron, British Petroleum have all pulled out their support for Arctic Power. Why should we, as a state, be giving millions of dollars to Arctic Power, promoting development, when the industry themselves are not interested, are not giving resources to this lobbying group? Line 14 on the resolution. Some residents, I would insert the word some residents of the North Slope Borough, are in support of oil development. There are other residents who are not. The entire Gwich'in Nation is against opening up the Arctic Refuge for development. That's 15 villages scattered across the Yukon Territory and Northeast Alaska. They're opposed to this. Nearly half of Alaskans have registered as being opposed to this. The majority of Americans are opposed to this. We as a state body, as a state, should not be promoting development in federally protected wildlife refuges. They were not set aside for that purpose. In fact, since 1964, there has been no new oil and gas drilling or leasing on any wildlife refuge in the country. It's prohibited under the National Wildlife Refuge Administration Act. So we would be circumventing that federal law as we promote this type of activity. So as a 30-year resident and someone who's written extensively about this area, by the way, the commemorative caribou in the oil rig, I think, is a souvenir that will not be very well received by some of us, and I hope that it gets shelved. I think you're throwing your money away to give it to Arctic Power. The vast majority of Americans are against this. This bill will not pass. And I urge you to to use that $1.1 million that you've got earmarked for Arctic Power. Do something with alternative energy.
Ms. Miller, let's stay on the subject of Senate Joint Resolution Number 2.
I am kind of overlapping there with the other one because they kind of tie together. One has the funding and the other has the language. But back to 2, page 2, top paragraph. I would urge you to strike line 1 through 4 because it is not accurate. They've estimated 3.2 billion barrels of economically recoverable oil in the Arctic Refuge. That would not reduce our nation's future need for imported oil. It would not significantly increase the nation's security. This is a drop in the bucket. We would use all that oil up in 6 months if we used it all at once, 3.2 billion. So it's a very small amount of oil given the fact of how little oil our country has. We only have 3% of the world's reserves. Drop. Line 16 on page 2, where it says the giant coastal plain fields. In 1998, the USGS updated their resource assessment of the 1002 area, and they ruled out the possibility of any super giant fields in the Arctic Refuge. That's been ruled out. We know that to be a fact now. That's coming from the USGS. There may be scattered small traps of oil, may or may not be oil there, but certainly this isn't another Prudhoe Bay. They've ruled that out. So I would strike that line, line 16. That's obsolete information. And then the last thing that I would ask you to strike would be line 23, where you say 2,000 to 7,000 acres. Representative Don Young has just introduced H.R. 39, and in that bill, he has 200,000 acres that would be up for lease. And the infrastructure would not be limited to just 2,000 acres or 7,000 acres. The pipelines go all over the place, as well as the roads, as well as gravel paths. You lose the wilderness. You disrupt the wildlife. This kind of activity does not belong in our only Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. We've got plenty of it to the west. 95% of the North Slope is open to oil and gas activity. Lots and lots of room for growth in this state without invading our only wildlife refuge. And thank you for letting me testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions, as I have walked across this area on numerous occasions and have written pretty extensively on the wildlife and the wilderness values of this amazing place.
Thank you for your testimony. Will you provide a copy of your testimony to my office, please?
I'd be happy to put something similar in writing, and this was just all from my oral testimony.
Okay, well, we've got it on tape. That's fine. We've got other items on the agenda. I'm going to limit the discussion to 3 minutes. Next person in public wishing to be heard is Fran Maher.
Hello, my name is Fran Maher. I'm a resident here at Fairbanks, Alaska. I've lived here in the state for somewhere around 34 years now, and 21 of those years I worked as a wildlife biologist on the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. And I'd like to state that I oppose any effort to support opening the Arctic Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling and development, and I urge you not to vote for any such actions. I believe it's entirely inappropriate for the state, or for any state for that matter, to pursue actions such as oil drilling that would jeopardize the integrity of a national conservation area. In my opinion, it's un-American to do this. You don't see the state of California pushing to develop energy resource in Yosemite National Park. You don't see the state of Arizona proposing and working to build a dam across the Grand Canyon. Neither should Alaska be pushing to undermine the integrity of our national conservation areas. I would also add that there's a number of things in your resolution that I believe are not quite accurate, to say the least. Lines 27 through 29, where it states that it can safely conduct oil and gas activities without adversely affecting the environment or wildlife populations. I believe this is largely not true. The environmental impact statement that was completed regarding leasing in the 1002 area found that there was a strong probability of having major effects on caribou, muskox, polar bears, wilderness, and subsistence. And that EIS has not been amended, and it stands as a legal document at this time. Another point is lines 30 through 31 or 32, which state that you can ensure continued health and productivity of the porcupine caribou herd and protect the land, water, and wildlife resources during exploration and development of the coastal plain. And I would submit that that's likely not true as well. The experience that has been learned with caribou over in the Prudhoe Bay area is that concentrations of calving caribou have been displaced during the calving season. And fortunately for those caribou over there, there's a broader coastal plain that accommodates their displacement. In the Arctic Refuge, we have five times as many caribou, using one-fifth as much area for calving, and the consequences of displacement are far greater in the case of the porcupine herd. Caution needs to be exercised in this situation, and the best solution is to not open this refuge for drilling. Thank you. If you have any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions by the committee? No questions. Thank you very much. Next, Lucy Beach.
Hello, my name is Lucy Beach, and I'm the executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee. And on behalf of the Gwich'in Nation, I urge you to oppose this bill. On line 30, where it says, whereas the state will ensure the continued health and productivity of the porcupine caribou herd and protection of land, water, and wildlife resources, I don't think that that this is possible. Oftentimes, we hear comparisons with the Central Arctic herd and the porcupine caribou herd and caribou snuggling up to the pipeline and such things. Because this area is not known as Ann War, it is known as the sacred place where life begins. And we have been caretakers of the porcupine caribou herd from time immemorial. And there is a vast difference with the Central Arctic herd and the porcupine caribou herd. There's a range of 100 miles from the Beaufort Sea to the foothills of the Brooks Range. For the Central Arctic herd, they have some place to go. For the porcupine caribou herd, there's only a 40-mile range until they get into the foothills of the Brooks Range where the predators are. So I would urge this body to reconsider. We have a gas line that it looks like is good to go that would provide many more jobs. But unfortunately, the National Petroleum Reserve has been open, as well as the offshore, which we are also saddened about because of the critical habitat area that the Teshupuk Lake area holds for our neighbors to the north, and of course, the dependence of the Inupiat people on the marine mammals. And may the Creator guide you in this decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy. Any questions? That's all of the people that are signed up for public testimony at this time. Jim Cowan is on line for oil and gas if you have any questions.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jim Cowan, yeah. Oil and Gas. No, I'm just here to listen. I have no questions. If I can answer any for you, I'll try.
All right. Anyone public wishes to testify on this bill? Mr. Adams?
Thank you.
Should I say Senator Adams?
No. Oh, sir, just
I think that title follows you even after you retire.
You lose it sometimes.
Oh.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Al Adams. I am a volunteer for the Arctic Power, which advocates for the opening of ANWR. And what we advocate is for jobs and energy for Americans through development of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge through its resources. And basically, we would like to also, the board of directors would like to thank you and our staff for the past financial support and continued support of this. And I'd just like to make it clear, one of the things that people need to understand as far as the land is concerned, it is about 18.5 million acres of land in ANWR. We do not want to touch $8 million of the wilderness. We do not want to touch the $9 million of the refuge. The only area we're talking about is the 1.5 million acres that is designated right here for oil and gas development. And you know, you hear things that we're going to go in there and ruin the wilderness or the refuge. You're not touching any of those. And that's, you'll hear it from these environmental groups telling half-truths on these. And basically, on that 1.5 million acres, we will be touching areas 64% less than Prudhoe Bay is. You know, the footprint will be much smaller. The technology, oil and gas development has changed in years. And so you will see a 64%. And we're talking about maybe 2,000 acres in this particular area. You know, the oil operations of the North Slope is probably the most regulated, efficient, and uses the highest of technology as. And if any of you travel to Alpine, you will see that. The wildlife. We have more caribou in the state of Alaska. We have over 1 million caribou. One of the largest herds in Western herds is 450,000 animals. The porcupine herd that was mentioned, that is 129,000 animals. And if you want to talk about polar bear, there's 2,700 polar bear up in the district. You know, bowheads, over 9,000 animals of bowheads up there. So animals and wildlife get along with that. Somebody mentioned Prudhoe Bay. When we finally finished that in 1979, we only had 3,000 animals there. In Prudhoe Bay today, caribou, we have 32,000. So the caribou with oil development is flourishing. Has there been opposition? Yes, we have opposition from the Gwich'ins because they're concerned about the caribou and the land, and they should be. However, in 1984, the Gwich'in Nation leased their whole land, $1.8 million acres for $1.8 million. If you want to see the contract that was signed, it was signed by the Gwich'in Nation. And then the question you have to ask yourself, where was their concern in 1984 for their caribou and the sacred land? We, as Alaskans, both Inupiaq people and Alaskans, would like to see that opened. 75% in the survey we did in Alaskans support the opening of Van Wert. 78% of the village that is there, Kaktobi, supports the opening of Van Wert. Is there any private land in Anwar? And if you look at the map, the little purple area there, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation owns 4 townships. And that's equal to about 92,160 acres in that. So there is private ownership. There is a village by Kaktobi. It isn't what you call a pristine surrogate. People actually use the land. And so you'll hear misconceptions that comes from the environmental groups. And there are two types of environmentalists. There's one like myself that live off the land and the sea and take care of it. And there are paper environmentalists that get a membership card, is a fax machine, and an email. But they don't go out and take care of the land like we do, and which is too bad. They fight us on development. I think that the benefits that you will see by passage of something like this is you will see a quick way to get funding in the general fund through royalty and bonuses. And I don't quote a figure. I do have a figure. It'll provide jobs in Alaska and U.S., you know, and it'll allocate it. Is there a couple of amendments I'd like to see? Yes. The village of Kaktobi and the native village could get $50,000 apiece, which is one of the sections in there. And I appreciate your time and members. Thank you.
Thank you. Your questions for Mr. Adams?
I've got a couple. You mentioned, this is the first time I've heard that, 1.8 million lease, was that for oil and gas exploration?
Yes, it was oil and gas exploration. It was a consultant that Senator Seekins know, their consultant at that time was Donald R. Wright, that made it happen. And the document was signed by also the one that opposes us today is Sarah James, who is going to be working in Oregon, campaigning against us, and also in Hawaii. But the list is here, and if there's any members who would like to look at the contract, the first chief at this time was Edward Frank, Alan Tritt, Virginia Henry, Gideon James, and Sarah James, Lincoln Tritt are some of the members that signed this contract here.
The other question I have, is the Arctic Slope, you mentioned the one area that's the Arctic Slope Corporation?
Yes.
Are they precluded from development of oil, or is it the fact that it's kind of like stranded and there's no way out for them to?
The reason is because in the federal law under 10.003, you need congressional approval before you can do anything in that particular section, even though they own 92,160 acres that Arctic Slope Regional Corporation has in that.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Seekin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Adams, excuse me for not being as sharp on geography, anthropological geography, as I should be. But when we talk about the area, what is it called, 1002 area?
Yes.
How close to that area do the Gwich'ins live?
They live approximately 150 miles away from that particular area. And the other thing is USGA estimated between 5.7 and 16 bin barrels in that particular section. And remember, when we first estimated Prudhoe Bay, we estimated there would only be 10 bin barrels coming from Prudhoe Bay. As of last year, we have already shipped through 14 bin. So we estimate there's going to be a large amount of oil in that particular section. But so, back to your question, it was 150 miles.
So the information that you've given to us today about their land being leased for oil exploration and the Nupiat lands being closed for oil exploration, are you intimating that there may be some economic reason for the Gwich'in people to keep the Inupiat lands closed to oil exploration?
No, I think each individual or each tribe has their own right to their opinion, and I respect that for the Gwich'ins, and maybe since 1984 they have a different opinion on caribou and their sacred land, and we all respect that.
That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Adams.
Thank you.
Anybody in addition wants to testify in the audience? Anybody else online? Okay, the issue is back before the committee. What's the pleasure of the committee?
Over.
Senator Seeker.
Senator, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 from committee with individual recommendations in the attached zero fiscal note.
You object? Please call the roll.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Dyson?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
Yes.
Senator Elton?
No.
Chair Wagner?
Yes.
Bill moves. Standard needs, just briefly.